23rd February 1937, there was a group of three middle-aged Andras on a visit to Sri Bhagavan. One of them kneeled and asked, "I am performing Hatha Yoga, namely Bhasti." Which one is that?
Bhasti.
Yeah. And Dhauti?
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 Dhauti. Which one is Dhauti?
And
oh,
neti.
With water. Neti.
Neti, but neti is the Dhauti next one.
Dhauti is the one you swallow.
Oh, you're in your throat.
Yeah, and then you do...
Etc. I find a blood vessel hardened in the ankle. Is it the result of yoga? Maharshi, the blood vessel would have hardened under any circumstances. It does not trouble you as much now as it would otherwise. Hatha Yoga is a cleaning process. It also helps peace of mind after leading you to pranayama. Devotee, may I do pranayama? Is it useful? Maharshi, pranayama is an aid for the control of mind. Only you should not stop with pranayama. You must proceed further to pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Full results are reaped finally. Another of the group asked, how are lust, anger, acquisitiveness, confusion, pride, and jealousy overcome? Maharshi, by dhyana. Devotee, what is dhyana? Maharshi, dhyana is holding on to a single thought and putting off all other thoughts. Devotee, what is to be meditated upon? Maharshi, anything that you prefer. Devotee, Shiva, Vishnu, and Gayatri are said to be equally efficacious. Which should I meditate upon? Maharshi, anyone you like best. They are all equal in their effect. But you should stick to one. Devotee, how to meditate?
How can I?
How to meditate.
Okay.
Maharshi, concentrate on that one whom you like best. If a single thought prevails, all other thoughts are put off and finally eradicated. So long as diversity prevails, there are bad thoughts. When the object of love prevails, only good thoughts hold the field. Therefore, hold on to one thought only. Dhyana is practice. A little later, Sri Bhagavan continued, dhyana means fight. As soon as you begin meditation, other thoughts will crowd together. Gather force and try to sink the single thought to which you try to hold. The good thought must gradually gain strength by repeated practice. After it has grown strong, the other thoughts will be put to flight. This is the battle royal always taking place in meditation. One wants to rid oneself of misery. It requires peace of mind, which means absence of perturbation owing to all kinds of thoughts. Peace of mind is brought about by dhyana alone. Devotee, what is the need for pranayama? Maharshi, pranayama is meant for one who cannot directly control the thoughts. It serves as a brake to the car. But one should not stop with it, as I said before, but must proceed to pratyahara, dharana, and dhyana. After the fruition of dhyana, the mind will come under control even in the absence of pranayama. The asanas, postures, help pranayama, which helps dhyana in its turn, and peace of mind results. Here is the purpose of Hatha Yoga. Later, Sri Bhagavan continued, when dhyana is well established, it cannot be given up. It will go on automatically even when you are engaged in work, play, or enjoyment. It will persist in sleep too. Dhyana must become so deep-rooted that it will be natural to one. Devotee, what right or action is necessary for the development of dhyana? Maharshi, dhyana is itself the action, the right, and the effort. It is the most intense and potent of all. No other effort is necessary. Devotee, is not japa necessary? Maharshi, is dhyana not vak, speech? Why is japa necessary for it? If dhyana is gained, there is no need for anything else. Devotee, is not a vow of silence helpful? Maharshi, a vow is only a vow. It may help dhyana to some extent. But what is the good of keeping the mouth shut, closed and letting the mind run riot? If the mind be engaged in dhyana, what is the need for speech? Nothing is as good as dhyana. Should one take to action with a vow of silence, where is the good of the vow? Devotee, what is jnana marga? I have been saying it for so long. What is jnana? Jnana means realization of the truth. It is done by dhyana. Dhyana helps you to hold on to the truth to the exclusion of all other thoughts. Devotee, why are so many gods mentioned? Maharshi, the body is only one. Still, how many functions are performed by it? The source of all the functions is only one. It is the same way with the gods also. Devotee, why does man suffer misery? Maharshi, misery is due to multifarious thoughts. If the thoughts are unified and centered on a single item, there is no misery, but happiness is the result. Then even the thought, I do something, is absent. Nor will there be an eye on the fruit of action.
So this was that continuation of 383, the talk you just read?
No, this is 371.
Okay, so you went backwards.
And this is 396.
Okay.
A Dutch lady, Mrs. Gongritz, an ardent theosophist, who had worked long in Java and is now living in Adyar, came here for a short visit. She said, theosophy speaks of tanha, meaning thirst for rebirth. What is its cause? Maharshi, thirst for rebirth is the desire to be reborn so as to end successive births. The spirit is at present moribund. It must be revived so that rebirth may take place after the present apparent death. Forgetfulness of your real nature is the present death. Remembrance of it is the rebirth. It puts an end to successive births. Yours is eternal life. Devotee, I take tanha to mean clinging to life, the desire for eternal life. Maharshi, no doubt it is so. How does the desire arise? Because the present state is unbearable. Why? Because it is not your true nature. Had it been your real nature, no desire would disturb you. How does the present state differ from your real nature? You are the spirit in truth. However, that spirit is wrongly identifying itself with the gross body. The body has been projected by the mind. The mind itself has originated from the spirit. If the wrong identification ceases, there will be peace and permanent, untellable bliss. Devotee life is the body, and rebirth is to incarnate in another body. Maharshi, mere change of body produces no effect. The ego associated with this body is transferred to another body. How can that satisfy anyone? Moreover, what is life? Life is existence which is yourself. That is life eternal. Otherwise, can you imagine a time when you are not? That life is now conditioned by the body, and you wrongly identify your being with that of the body. You are life unconditioned. These bodies attach themselves to you as mental projections, and you are now afflicted by I am the body idea. If this idea ceases, you are yourself. Where or how were you before being born? Were you in sleep? How were you? You exist then too without the body. Then the ego arises. And then the mind, which projects the body, I am the body idea is the result. Because the body exists, you say that it was born and then that it will die. And transfer the idea to the self, saying that you are born and that you will die. In fact, you remain without the body in sleep, but now you remain with the body. The self can remain without the body, but the body cannot exist apart from the self. I am the body thought is ignorance. That the body is not part apart from the self is knowledge. That is the difference between knowledge and ignorance. The body is a mental projection. The mind is the ego. And the ego rises from the self. So the body thought is distracting and strays away from the self. For whom is the body or the birth? It is not for the self, the spirit. It is for the non-self, which imagines itself separate. So long as there is the sense of separation, there will be afflicting thoughts. If the original source is regained and the sense of separation is put to an end, there is peace. Consider what happens when a stone is thrown up. It leaves its source and is projected up, tries to come down, and is always in motion until it regains its source, where it is at rest. So also the waters of the ocean evaporate, form clouds which are moved by winds, condense into water, fall as rain, and the waters roll down the hill in streams and rivers until they reach their original source, the ocean, reaching which they are at peace. Thus you see, wherever there is a sense of separateness from the source, there is agitation and movement until the sense of separateness is lost. So it is with yourself. Now that you identify yourself with the body, you think that you are separate from the spirit, the true self. You must regain your source before the false identity ceases and you are happy. Gold is not an ornament, but the ornament is nothing but gold. Whatever shape the ornament may assume, and however different the ornaments are, there is only one reality, namely gold. So also with the bodies and the self. The single reality is the self. To identify oneself with the body and yet to seek happiness is like attempting to cross a river on the back of an alligator. The body identity is due to extroversion and the wandering of the mind. To continue in that state will only keep one in an endless tangle, and there will be no peace. Seek your source. Merge in the self and remain all alone. Rebirth means discontent with the present state and desire to be born where there will be no discontent. Births, being of the body, cannot affect the self. The self remains over even after the body perishes. The discontent is due to the wrong identity of the eternal self with the perishable body. The body is a necessary adjunct of the ego. If the ego is killed, the eternal self is revealed in all its glory. The body is the cross. Jesus, the Son of Man. The ego, or the I am the body idea. When he is crucified, he is resurrected as the glorious self. Jesus, the Son of God, give up this life if thou wouldst live. Talk 397. Devotee. Fear is consequent on the possibility of non-existence. It pertains to the body. One is not aware of the body in sleep. One is not afraid of, but courts sleep. Whereas one dreads death. Why this difference between the two outlooks? Maharshi, desire of sleep or fear of death are when the mind is active and not in the respective states themselves. The mind knows that the body entity persists and reappears after sleep. Therefore, sleep is not attended with fear, but the pleasure of non-bodily existence is sought. Whereas the mind is not sure of reappearance after the so-called death and dreads it. 14th April 1937. Dandapani, a resident devotee now on a North Indian tour, sent an extract from the Modern Psychological Review. I can never find this magazine. You know. I looked and asked psychologists to look in their libraries and universities, the Modern Psychological Review, which stated that the dynamic center of the heart is on the right.
Who were the publishers at that time? Was it the
Modern Psychological Review? Was a magazine.
Right, but we don't know who the publishers were. Only some.
On the right and on the left, whereas a physical organ is on the dynamic center of the heart is on the right, and not on the left, whereas the physical organ is on the left. The conversation followed on that subject. Maharshi, the Yoga Marga speaks of the six centers.
What Marga?
Yoga.
Yoga.
Each of which must be reached by practice and transcended until one reaches Sahasrara, where nectar is found and thus immortality. The yogis say that one enters into the Paranadi, which starts from the sacral plexus, whereas the jnanis say that the same nadi starts from the heart. Reconciliation between the seemingly contradictory statements is effected in the secret doctrine, which distinctly states the yogic paranadi is from Muladhara and the jnana paranadi is from the heart. The truth is that the Paranadi should be entered. By yogic practice, one goes down, then rises up, wanders all through until the goal is reached. By jnana abhyasa, one settles down directly in the center. Nivoti is not para, followed by pashanti, etc. Maharshi, you are speaking of vak, which is divided into one, para, two, pashanti, three, madhyama, and four, vaikuri. Vak is prana shakti, whereas the mind is tejo rupa or chit shakti. The shakti is a manifestation of the unmanifest origin. The yogis attach the highest importance to going up to sahasrara, that is, the brain center or the thousand-petal lotus. Some yogis say that there are other centers higher up, with greater involution, for example, 100,000 or 100-petaled or 100 million or 108-petaled ones. Let us omit them for the present. The point, they point out the scriptural statement that the life current enters the body through the fontanelle and argue that vinyoga separation having come about that way, yoga union must also be affected in the reverse way. They say when you're born that the jiva enters through that. And that's why it's soft on a baby's head at that point. Because you can't get through unless it's soft, I guess. I don't know.
That's a fontanelle.
Sounds theoretical. And they give after the mother with the embryo or...
embryo.
Yeah, so how many months? They have also, like after 7 months or something, it comes there, or just before it's born, it comes there. So there's no actual individual in the
fetus,
in the baby, well, it's in the stomach until just before it's born or something. They give some time factor also. So this is the anti-abortionist thing, you know.
Yeah.
They say that there's really, for the Hindu, it doesn't make a big thing because the jiva hasn't entered it.
There's no jiva.
The jiva hasn't entered it yet. Although they give some images of babies in the womb, you know, reacting to stimulus and experiencing pain and things like this.
Right.
But, you know, then they say, yes, baby, even 3 months old is experiencing
responsive
pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a baby, a miracle of life. In that, they show the baby in the womb sucking the tongue to
eat. Right. And all physical manifestations.
Yeah.
But there's no prana there.
Therefore, we must, by yoga practice, gather up the pranas and enter the fontanelle for the consummation of yoga. The jnanis point out that the yogi assumes the existence of the body, its separateness from the self, and therefore advises effort for reunion by the practice of yoga. In fact, the body is in the mind, which has the brain for its seat, which again functions by light borrowed from another source, as admitted by the yogis themselves in their fontanelle theory. The jnani further argues, if the light is borrowed, it must come from its native source. Go to the source direct and do not depend on borrowed sources, resources. Just as an iron ball comes into being separate from the mass of iron, gets fiery, and fire later cools down, giving up the fire, but must again be made fiery to reunite with the original mass, so also the cause of separation must also form the factor of reunion. Again, if there is an image reflected there, must be a source and also accessories like the sun and a pot of water for reflection. To do away with the reflection, either the surface is covered up corresponding to reaching the fontanelle, according to the yogis, or the water is drained away, which is called tapas, tapo brahmeti. Tapas is Brahman. That is to say, the thought or the brain activities are made to cease. This is jnana marga. All these are, however, on the assumption that the jiva is separate from the self or Brahman. But are we separate? No, says the jnani. The ego is simply wrong identity of the self with the non-self, as in the case of a colorless crystal and its colored background. The crystal, though colorless, appears red because of its background. If the background is removed, the crystal shines in its original purity. So it is with the self and the antakarana. Still again, the illustration is not quite appropriate, for the ego has its source from the self and is not separate like the background from the crystal. Having a source from the self, the ego must only be retraced in order that it might merge in its source. The center of the ego and its core is called the heart, the same as the self. A gentleman asked if the yogis also reach the anahata and thus realize the heart center as done by the jnanis, but in a different way. Maharshi said, anahata is not the same as the heart center. If so, why should they wander further onto Sahasrara? Moreover, the question arises because the sense of separateness persists in us. We are never away from the heart center. Before reaching anahata, after passing it, one is only in the center. Whether one understands it or not, one is not away from the center. Practice of yoga or vichara is done, always remaining in the center only. Devotee, what is to be our sadhana? Maharshi, sadhana is for the sadhaka. Sadhana for the sadhaka is the sahaja for the siddha. Sahaja is the original state. So that sadhana amounts to the removal of the obstacles to the realization of this abiding truth. Devotee, is concentration of mind one of the sadhanas? Sure. Maharshi, concentration is not thinking one thing. It is, on the other hand, putting off all other thoughts which obstruct the vision of our true nature. All our efforts are only directed to lifting the veil of ignorance. Now it appears difficult to quell the thoughts. In the regenerate state, it will be found more difficult to call in thoughts. For are there things to think of? There is only the self. Thoughts can function only if there are objects, but there are no objects. How can thoughts arise at all? The habit makes us believe that it is difficult to cease thinking. If the error is found out, one would not be fool enough to exert oneself unnecessarily by way of thinking. Devotee, is not grace more effective than abhyasa? Mercy, Guru simply helps you in the eradication of ignorance. Does he hand over realization to you? Devotee, we are ignorant. Mercy, inasmuch as you say you are ignorant, you are wise. Is he a madman who says that he is mad? Guru's grace is like a hand extended to help you out of water, or it makes your way easier for the removal of ignorance. devotee, is it not like a medicine to cure the disease of avidya, mercy? What is medicine for? It is only to restore the patient to the original state of health. What is this talk of Guru, grace, God, etc.? Does the Guru hold you by the hand and whisper something in your ear? You imagine him to be like yourself. Because you are with a body, you think that he also is also a body in order to do something tangible to you. His work lies within. How is Guru gained? God, who is eminent, in his grace takes pity on the loving devotee and manifests himself as a being according to the devotee's standard. The devotee thinks that he is a man and expects a relationship as between bodies. But the Guru, who is God or Self incarnate, works from within, helps the man to see the error of his ways, guides him in the right path until he realizes the Self within. After such realization, the disciple feels, I was so worried before. I am, after all, the Self, the same as before, but not affected by anything. Where is he who was miserable? He is nowhere to be seen. What should we do now? Only act up to the words of the Master. Work within. The Guru is both within and without, so he creates conditions to drive you inward and prepares the interior to drag you to the center. Thus he gives a push from without and exerts a pull from within so that you may be fixed at the center. In sleep, you are centered within. Simultaneously with waking, your mind rushes out, thinking this, that, and all else. This must be checked. It is possible only for the agent who can work both within and without. Can he be identified with a body? We think that the world can be conquered by our efforts. When frustrated externally and driven internally, we feel, oh, there is a power higher than man. The existence of the higher power must be admitted and recognized. The ego is a very powerful elephant and cannot be brought under control by any less than a lion, who is no other than the Guru in this instance, whose very look makes the elephant tremble and die. We will know in due course that our glory lies where we cease to exist. In order to gain that state, one should surrender oneself, saying, Lord, Thou art my refuge. The Master then sees this man is in a fit state to receive guidance, and so guides him. Devotee, what is self-surrender? It is the same, Maharshi, it is the same as self-control. Control is effected by removal of samskaras, which imply the functioning of the ego. The ego submits only when it recognizes the higher power. Such recognition is surrender or submission, or self-control. Otherwise, the ego remains stuck up like an image carved on a tower, making a pretense by its strained look and posture that it is supporting the tower on its shoulders. The ego cannot exist without the power, but thinks that it acts of its own accord. Devotee, how can the rebellious mind be brought under control? Maharshi, either seek its source so that it may disappear, or surrender that it may be struck down. Devotee, but the mind slips away from our control. Maharshi, be it so. Do not think of it. When you recollect yourself, bring it back and turn it inward. That is enough. No one succeeds without effort. Mind control is not one's birthright. The successful few owe their success to their perseverance. A passenger in a train keeps his load on the head by its own folly. Let him put it down. He will find the load reaches the destination all the same. Similarly, let us not pose as the doers, but resign ourselves to the guiding power. Devotee, Swami Vivekananda says that a spiritual guru can transfer spirituality substantially to the disciple. Maharshi, is there a substance to be transferred? Transfer means eradication of the sense of being the disciple. The master does it. Not that the man was something at one time and metamorphosed later into another. Devotee, is not grace the gift of the guru? Maharshi, God, grace, and guru are all synonymous and also eternal and immanent. Is not the self already within? Is it for the guru to bestow it by his look? If a guru thinks so, he does not deserve the name. The books say that there are so many kinds of diksha, initiations. Hasta diksha, sparsa diksha, chakshu diksha, mano diksha, etc. They also say that the guru makes some rites with fire, water, japa, mantras, etc., and call such fantastic performances dikshas, as if the disciple, the shishya, becomes right only after such processes are gone through by the guru. If the individual is sought, he is nowhere to be found. Such is the guru. Such is Dakshinamurti. What did he do? He was silent. The disciples appeared before him. He maintained silence. The doubts of the disciples were dispelled, which means that they lost their individual identities. That is jnana, and not all the verbiage usually associated with it. Silence is the most potent form of work. However vast and emphatic the sastras may be, they fail in their effect. The guru is quiet, and peace prevails in all. His silence is more vast and more emphatic than all the sastras put together. These questions arise because of the feeling that having been here so long, heard so much, exerted so hard, one has not gained anything. The work proceeding within is not apparent. In fact, the guru is always within you. Tayamana Far says, quote, O Lord, coming with me all along the births, never abandoning me, and finally rescuing me, unquote.
Who says that?
Oh Lord.
No, who says
it? Tayamanavar.
Tayamanavar.
Such is the experience of realization. Srimad Bhagavad Gita says the same in a different way. Quote, we too are not only now, but have ever been so, unquote. Devotee, does the guru take a concrete form? Maharshi, what is meant by concrete? Because you identify your being with your body, you raise this question. Find out if you are the body. The Gita says, param bhavam ajanantaha. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 2. That those who cannot understand the transcendental nature of Sri Krishna are fools, deluded by ignorance. The Master appears to dispel that ignorance. As Tayamanavar puts it, He appears as a man to dispel the ignorance of a man, just as a deer is used as a decoy to capture the wild deer. He has to appear with a body in order to eradicate our ignorant I am the body idea.
Okay.